And it's Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's topic, we're going to talk about stuff that really won't help a retirement plan sponsor limit their liability. Just full of nuggets of information and discussion, some great parts of the industry that just won't really, on paper, sounds really nice, but really won't help a plan sponsor at all. But of course, first things first, we got events coming up. Of course, first thing off the top, that 401k National Virtual Conference, January 21 to 22, 2021. We're switching over to the early bird pricing that's ending and going to the standard rate, but still a deal. Where else can you get it? Go to a two-day conference, learn a whole bunch of stuff, and pay less than, $35. Walt Frazier will be there on day one. Day two, Doc Gooden, good friend of mine, as well as Congressman Jamie Raskin, Ron Nearing, the Retireholics. We're going to have a lot of good presentations. Wealth Prime is going to be there. They're going to show you. Dan Harding showed me what he's preparing, his new program that will literally change the way, in my opinion, the way TPAs and advisors are going to scout prospects. It just blew my mind. And, I don't like to exaggerate when something's really, really good, and that is something really, really good. And, obviously with the other presentations that are going to be there, we'll talk about PEPs. Sherry Fitz will be there with marketing. It's going to be a fun event, 2 days, all Zoom. And, hopefully, eventually, soon, we can talk about live events. We got a whole bunch of live events that we got to reschedule. Houston, St. Louis, Minnesota. And unfortunately, Las Vegas, we're going to have to reschedule because it was scheduled to be in December. But, the fact of the matter is that it was not realistic as what's going on. And hopefully next year we got a vaccine. I'll be one of the first ones. I don't believe in cutting in line, but this is probably the one time I wish I could cut in line and get a vaccine. But that's neither here nor there. Other events, of course. On Thursday, December the 3rd, 4 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to talk to that 401k virtual bunch. I'm going to talk to Larry Davis. And for those people that have attended my events, that 401k conference, Larry Davis is one of the most integral parts of that 401k conference. And why? Larry Davis is a good friend of mine. I've known him for a very, very long time, back in his days when he was a vice president at Steiner Sports. Larry books my athlete appearances. So, when... we plot events. I always have that discussion with Larry. Who can we bring in at this budget? And I think one time he told me a certain New England Patriot, and I think it was like $50,000. And I'm like, Larry, I don't have $50,000. I have just a fraction of that. So we couldn't book that guy at the Patriot event. But that's what Larry does. Larry's involved with sports marketing, sports memorabilia, even financial advisory work and insurance and all that. Larry to me reminds me of Red from Shawshank Redemption. Everybody knows, hard to say what number on my list, but The Shawshank Redemption is one of my favorite movies of all time. I always jokingly say it got me through law school, and Larry's my Red. So when I have problems with a venue in terms of pricing and whatnot, Larry's the one who gets on the phone and is the one who haggles. And Larry is, a dear friend of mine, and we'll talk about his experiences and whatnot. He's actually also into acting. I think he was in a television. He's been in a play. He's been. I think this was a TV pilot. He's doing something. He's got his hands in everything. And so it'll be a great time to talk to Larry. And then on December 18th at 401k Virtual Conference number 9, we'll have that close out the year, and then of course go to the national virtual event again, January 21-22. Go to that foreignksite.com for further information on how you can sign up. You want a sponsor? You know, I'm very transparent. $1,500 to present for 30 minutes, $2,500 for 50. You want to say hello and, you know, be part of the event, $750 as well. You know, I'm not going to be one of those events where, you know, charging two arms to present. So anyway, let's talk about the stuff that won't help a retirement plan sponsor limit their liability. A lot of great things out there. There are some methods of protection, but ultimately they won't help them limit their liability. Number one on the list is obviously an ERISA bond. It's so funny how even people in the retirement plan space don't understand between the bond and fiduciary liability insurance. An ERISA bond is a requirement for any ERISA plan to purchase a bond to protect against theft by plan fiduciaries. It used to be, you know, a question about the bond and whatnot, and, you know, and it's a question on the Form 5500. And if you are an ERISA covered plan and you don't have a bond, and you answer no that you don't have a bond because you're answering a 5500 under penalties of perjury, then you know the chances you're going to get audited are a lot higher. Because, you know, one of the ways to see that a plan's in distress, in my opinion, is that they don't have a bond. And I have seen plans get audited just because of that question that they answered for them. And again, ERISA bond's legally required. Fiduciary liability insurance is not. The problem with the bond is that the amount of coverage, the 10% requirement, it offers some coverage from theft, but it doesn't offer, all protections of theft of all plan assets. And as far as coverage, you know, fiduciary liability insurance to me, while it's not legally required, it should be required in the sense that I think that any ERISA-covered plan should purchase it. It's inexpensive. A bond protects the plan against theft by plan fiduciaries. Fiduciary liability protects the plan from litigation threats against the plan fiduciaries. So it's all about protecting the fiduciaries. I've seen it many times being acted upon through clients. And it's a very cost-effective method of coverage, especially because fiduciaries can be held liable for any losses that they're held liable for. The ERISA bond protects against theft by plan fiduciaries, but doesn't protect the plan fiduciaries from anything else. So if a plan sponsor is getting sued, for a breach of fiduciary duty, the ERISA bond is of little, or it's of no use. But it's legally required. So when I had a client who Bernie Madoff, lost $3 million or effectively stole $3 million as part of his Ponzi scheme, I had a plan sponsor who did not have fiduciary, did not, I'm sorry, did not have an ERISA bond and therefore could not recover any amounts except for dependent on what the trustee who was picked to by the courts to go out and try to marshal back the money. It's all there. It's legally required, but it offers the plan sponsor just absolutely no protection. Next on my list is a corporate trustee. Many retirement plans utilize the services of a trust company to serve as a plan trustee. And, you know, the problem is that, you know, they effectively just work at the direction of the plan sponsor. It's all about signing checks and, filing the 1099s, you know, the pay service, the corporate trustee, It does very little in terms of protecting the plan sponsor in terms of liability. The reason you hire a corporate trustee are two reasons. One is nobody wants to serve as a trustee, or more importantly, the plan is audit eligible, requiring a CPA firm to prepare an independent audit. When you use a corporate trustee, the corporate trustee can self-certify trust statements. Therefore, plan sponsor can use a limited scope audit instead of a full scope audit, which is obviously more cost-effective to the plan sponsor. So again, corporate trustees, they sign the distribution checks, they remit withholding on plan distributions and certify trust statements. They don't do really anything else that would really help a plan sponsor in limiting their liability. Next on my list is using plan providers. You can use a third-party administration firm. You can hire a financial advisor. It can help somewhat, but not as much as you think, because ultimately the plan sponsor is on the hook. So, for example, if you had a TPA who was also serving in an ERISA 316 administration, while yes, the plan sponsor did delegate the authority and the liability of the administrative process to the 316 administrator, if they hired a really bad one, like, you know, Jeff Ritchie, who's now, I think he's in jail now, who was a TPA / 316 administrator, the plan sponsor is still liable for a faulty hiring, for negligent hiring. So while liability is somewhat limited, it's not fully eliminated. And in TPAs who don't serve in a 316 fashion, well, the plan sponsor is going to always be on the hook. I mean, plan sponsor always has the right to sue for negligence, but, you know, to sue and to recover and whatnot, sometimes in litigation, the damage that was cost to you are going to be outweighed by the cost of litigation. So, yeah, you know, how many times I have a client who the TPA did wrong by them and we have to file for a VCP application and my fee and the VCP fee is, you know, nuisance value. You're not going to sue for, you know, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, or $10,000. It's just not going to happen. You could send a stern letter to a plan provider, but if they ignore it, you're not really going to sue. And, you know, it's a problem. Talk about plan providers, you know, I always talk about the two plan providers I know who stole millions of dollars. You know, ultimately, yeah, these guys are in jail, but that does really little solace to the plan sponsors that have to try to recover money. And I, again, my career, you hear so many plan sponsors saying, you know what, the TPA told me to do this, the financial told me, financial advisor told me to do that. But ultimately, the plan sponsor is still on the hook, no matter what. Next on my list, investment policy statement that isn't used. You know, investment policy statement is not legally required, but, you know, we always stress the need for an IPS because it shows that the plan sponsor is prudent in the fiduciary process and in managing the fiduciary process. And one way to show that is to prepare an investment policy statement that shows that the plan sponsor, you know, had this criteria on when, how plan investments are selected and when they're replaced. You know, like I said, it's not legally required. Everybody talks about it, but there's nothing in the regs or in ERISA that says that it has to be done. But the reason we do it is, again, to show a prudent process. The problem is when you have plan sponsors with their advisors who have an investment policy statement and they never bother to review it. They never bother to review the investments and use the criteria. So if you know, you have an IPS that is very stern and very rigid in terms of replacement. Let's say it says after a quarter, if the fund on the FI 360 report is in the red zone, we should replace it. And if you don't, you obviously breach the terms of your IPS. And if you breach the terms of your IPS, It means you weren't following a prudent fiduciary process. And the same thing is if you ignore it completely. And so I will always say that if you have an investment policy statement and you don't use it, you don't follow it, it's worse than not having an investment policy statement at all. So it's like a double-edged sword. You know, the investment policy statement most of the time is a good thing, and sometimes it's a bad thing. And the reason it's a bad thing is when you don't follow it. And, you know, it's like a diet. It's like a diet plan. I just went to the doctor a couple days ago, and I lost 40-some-odd pounds about a year and a half ago, and I've gained 20 back. And, you know, obviously COVID hasn't really helped with that. But, you know, IPS is like a diet plan. If you don't follow it, you're not going to lose weight. If you do follow it, you will. And the investment policy statement is all about prudence. You're going to follow it. Well, then you're following a prudent process. If you're not following it, then, you know, you're going to be, you know, possibility, you know, trouble, liability. Because if you have a policy statement and the court sees that you didn't follow it, well, you're going to have a tough hill to climb in terms of protecting yourself as a plan sponsor. Next on my list, participant direction investment without helping the participants. In an ideal world, you know, I'm a realist. Listen, I'm grounded in reality. I live in a community where I think a lot of people are not. They got these crazy notions. And, you know, I'm not one of those people who's, you know, talking about nostalgia. Because, yeah, there are a lot of great things about nostalgia, but, you know, in technology, I think technology is better today, obviously, whatever. But what I always say is that the best thing for a plan sponsor in an ideal world is to have a trustee directed 401k plan, which, you know, that the ship has set sailed for trust, you know, balance forward trustee directed 401k plans. But as an ERISA attorney, they are the best. Why are they the best? Because it requires the trustees to use a financial advisor who is knowledgeable about investments to help make the plan sponsor make the decisions in terms of investments. And ERISA 404C participant-directed plans, the reason why we have participant-directed plans is the technology was pushing it. And obviously the liability. But it really was the mutual companies that wanted that. By using participant-directed investments, obviously the most effective savings vehicle, most effective investment option is a mutual fund. You know, it's easily tradable and whatnot. So the mutual fund companies were pushing it. Again, I think participants are the least knowledgeable in terms of making investment decisions. And while mutual fund companies were touting 404C and TPAs were doing it and advisors were doing it, the fact of the matter is that they weren't honest or they didn't understand the role of ERISA 404C, that for a plan sponsor not to be held liable for the losses sustained by a participant in an ERISA 404C plan, that the participant gets some information in order to make informed investment decisions. When I was at that law firm, I always talk about, the plan, the human resources director, show me the plan investments, and this is right before I was eligible, and you know these investments are really, really old, and we didn't have investment advisor on the plan. The investments weren't reviewed for 10 years. There was no IPS, and more, you know, from the participant perspective, you know, the HR director would give us Morningstar profiles and say good luck. And in order to achieve liability protection or risk of 404C, it's a sliding scale. The more information that a plan sponsor provides to participants, you know, investment education, investment advice, if they want to give advice, you know, there's going to be a greater layer of protection. And plans where, again, there's no education, there's nothing, There's not even Morningstar profiles. You know, a plan participant loses money, the plan sponsor may be on the hook for liability. And you know, that's the, I always say, the problem that I have with, that is the problem that I have with plans, in participant directed plans, because so many of them are not optimally run in terms of providing education to plan participants, and so therefore they will get almost absolutely no protection under ERISA 404C, which was the whole intent and the whole purpose of using a participant directed plan. So, you know, a lot of these smaller plans, the losses aren't large, so litigation isn't a possibility, but it's always there. You know, that's why I hate self-directed brokerage accounts, because plan sponsors don't, you know, kind of don't review what's going on in those SBDAs. You know, you could always have that participant who's going to put in all their money with a double inverse bear ETF, or making weird option calls and whatnot. So it's important that, you know, IPS is part of that fiduciary process, but, you know, providing education to participants, reviewing investment options, changing it when it needs to, these are the building blocks of a prudent fiduciary process. And if you're not providing any education or any help whatsoever to plan participants, you are absolutely getting no protection, almost no protection. Again, it's a sliding scale. And that's, you know, that's how I see it. Last on my list are fiduciary warranties. Now, they're not as popular as they were 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, you had a lot of the bundled providers, which, again, are mostly insurance companies. They would offer the plan sponsor something called a fiduciary warranty. And the problem with these warranties were, they were not worth the paper they were printed on. It was something along the lines, they were very limited, very limiting in terms of the protection. Basically, the provider would indemnify the plan sponsor if the plan sponsor ever got sued under the broad range requirement under ERISA 404C. The broad range requirement, you know, under ERISA 404C, you have to pick like three or four funds that are broad range in terms of investment style. The problem with that, the fiduciary warranty would only protect plan sponsors in that role. And I've never seen a case where a plan sponsor ever got sued, because it's such a small provision, and almost every plan I've ever seen offers that. You know, I think the only situation would be is if an ERISA plan only had a large cap fund, or only had stable value, or you know, didn't have international or something, or a balance funds. So, you know, a warranty is like insurance, obviously. It's dictated by its terms, and most providers offering them provide little or no protection the plan sponsor holds one of them. A good friend of mine who was, I won't out him, but he was, he's a good friend of mine. He was on the Virtual Bunch on an episode. And he's the one who coined it the best, and I won't embarrass him by mentioning his name. If insurance company providers, this is what he said to me. If insurance company providers are in the business of insuring risk, what does it say about these fiduciary warranties if they give them away for free? And he has a point. You know, a plan provider giving away a fiduciary warranty, there's no teeth behind it. There's no level of protection. And again, that broad range of requirement, that's not where plan sponsors get sued. Plan sponsors may get sued for, you know, plan costs or not providing education to 404C participants, or, you know, costs are, you know, obviously where the big class action lawsuits are, and prudence, and not picking the cheapest share class. This is where plan sponsors get sued. So that's that, you know, that's where it is. And many years ago, so they were more popular 10 years ago. A lot of the insurance companies were pushing it. And I wrote an article about it, you know, 10 years ago. And I remember one of the local, the New York area guy for one of these insurance companies who I knew from my days at a TPA place called Geller Group. I was, you know, he was a person on LinkedIn that I connected with, but never drew me a dime of business when I was on my own. And I remember him, you know, emailing me and said, as a result of my article, he had considered me of referring me work. But as a result of the article, he was not going to refer me work, which, you know, I didn't feel bad about because the guy never referred me work. And, you know, this is what happens when you are outspoken. You know, when I was with JD with the Retireaholics at that 401k virtual, oh, I'm sorry, the 401k National Conference in Disney World when, right before COVID, you know, that's where I said, you know, I'm the turd in the punch bowl. I'm very, very frank and honest. And, you know, unfortunately, honesty, has consequences and I'm willing to accept that. You know, if you say something bad about fiduciary warranties, well, you know what, these companies that are offering it, they're not going to sponsor your events. They're not going to push you out, whatever. They're not going to refer you work, which that company did eventually sponsor my events. That person who emailed me 10 years ago no longer works for that company. So when I had a New York event, they did sponsor the event. So, you know, I guess 10 years ago, whatnot. But, you know, there's a price to be paid for being upfront and honest and transparent. And that's it. You know, listen. This is the path I've chosen, and you got to bear the consequences of it. So anyway, that concludes another episode of that 401k podcast. I record this right before Thanksgiving. It's going to drop right after Thanksgiving. And as we get closer to the new year, we'll have more discussions about that 401k National Virtual Conference, as well as some of the other things I have in the pipeline. So. Thank you, and hope you tune in next week. Thank you. Bye.